them Radical Russ sent you.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
Welcome back, everybody. Time to take your dose of cannabis medicine with Cannabis Q&A. Dr. Mitch is on the line with us from SUNY Albany. Where is it, sunny at SUNY today?
Sunny but cold. We got up to 27 and it felt really warm.
Oh my God, 27. I don't even want to tell you what this weekend was like in Portland. Once again, I had Southerners. We had Southerners from Texas this time. And once again, it was beautiful and blue skies and sunny. I got to bring Southerners here to my place a little more often, I think.
Sounds like a good habit.
All right. Folks, want to remind you, we're taking our live questions with Dr. Mitch Earlywine in our Cannabis Q&A. You can get your question on the phone by dialing 971-533-7111. And we also take questions in our chat room. If you go to 420radio.org, click on the green chat button. Just scroll down a bit. You'll find it. And you can ask live chat questions. But we always start off the segment by giving Dr. Mitch the opportunity to tell us what's new in the world of cannabis science.
We've got still more coverage on this cannabis being less lethal than just about anything else. Some new treatment effects done at down in New Orleans at LSU. Women's perceptions of cannabis is more risky. And studies identifying teens at risk for synthetic marijuana use. And finally, the cerebrovascular events, one of those case control studies that probably looks a little more horrifying than it is.
All right. Well, let's just run down the list here. We reported on this last week, too, the study that came out that said not only is marijuana safer than alcohol, it's the safest, and alcohol is the most dangerous of the recreational drugs. Any new fallout from that that you wanted to tell us about or how people are reacting to this study?
What I just liked was this Huffington Post coverage has a really nice, vivid graphic of all of this. And you see THC way, way down in the low-risk category, and literally all the other drugs up in the high-risk and risky drug categories. And it just kind of sends the message home that it's not just that marijuana is a little less risky, it's probably 150 times less risky, and I think it just sends a nice message.
I'm surprised that we didn't hear anything coming out of the anti-marijuana side, where the chart clearly showed that not only is marijuana was safer than alcohol, but so is cocaine and meth and even heroin. And I wonder why they didn't attack, they said marijuana was safer. What's next? Cocaine being legal?
It's funny because once you take a look at these data, you can see, cocaine's a little safer than alcohol, but not a lot. And so I feel like our argument about a separate market for THC really does make some sense.
All right. Let's get to a question from the chat room. Pokey Smokey from Idaho. It's a very simple question. Decarboxylization. What, how, why? I love that.
The bottom line is that THC for making at least edibles and probably tinctures as well responds better if you can decarboxylate. You can basically take one of these carbon compound aspects off the big molecule simply by, getting your oven heated up to about 200 degrees, sticking your ground-up cannabis on a nice cookie sheet all laid out nice and flat, putting it in there, turning the oven off, and letting it cool down. And odds are high, you don't want to burn it, but you'll notice that it's a little bit browner. And then go ahead and put that in your 151 rum or your food-based glycerin or any of those kinds of things. Wait a while, and you'll find it's a lot more accessible, a lot more THC can actually get into your system than if you just throw the regular green pod in there.
Okay, so this is like some sort of transformative process then that's getting us what we really want.
In fact, it's essentially making the THC more accessible by exposing it to heat a little bit beforehand.
All right. We have this story, and it's interesting survey information, Pew Research, or was it Pew? I'm not sure, but that women were nearly twice as likely to see regular cannabis use as risky. That kind of comports with what we see in opinion polls on legalization, where women are usually 5 to 10 points behind men's support. And Vendekar in our chat room wants to know what you think are the contributing factors that concern women's feelings on cannabis safety.
Well, what's curious is, women also perceive a lot of other things as riskier. And I think the framing it as, oh, women see things as riskier, may be a bit of a sexist way of wording it. In fact, it's that men just think they're immune to anything. So, I mean, men think eating fat is less risky. Men think not exercising is less risky. So I really feel like trying to pin this just on some wild cannabis-related attitudes may be missing the boat that, in fact, men are just sensation seekers who think they're immune to all things until they, you know, reach a certain age.
I like that. We got to just look at it from the other side. It's not that women think cannabis is more risky. It's men think it's less risky.
Exactly.
Okay. We have these cannabis treatments being studied at Louisiana State University in New Orleans at their Department of Health. And I believe it had something to do with Alzheimer's research. Can you fill us in on this?
This is actually really cool, and we've had data since 2006, if not earlier, suggesting that the amyloid plaques that are associated with Alzheimer's seem to develop much less rapidly when THC is there to kind of interfere with that process. And then this is also citing some of the research where basically if you've got a COX-2 inhibitor, if you've got basically sort of aspirin-like anti-inflammatory compounds in combination with the THC, you're probably not going to get the negative memory effects or some of the things that people are concerned about with THC, and you can still get those splendid antioxidant, anti-cancer, and anti-inflammatory effects. And so I'm not sure what the design is here, and in part because it's funded by a drug company, we may not get to know until the product is developed. But the fact that anybody is throwing almost $500,000 at this gives me a lot of hope. I mean, obviously my mom had dementia, so I'm super sensitive to this kind of stuff. But I really feel like there's something here that's big for a big aging population where it looks like this has a lot of promise. In fact, the last study I saw suggested that THC was better at interfering with that amyloid plaque development than a few of the drugs that have already been approved for Alzheimer's disease.
Wow, that is remarkable. And I think as we see the aging baby boomer demographic head into their silver years, there's going to be a lot more attention to geriatric care. And I believe cannabis could have a large effect on that, don't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We have a follow-up question from left-wing Larry in our chat room on the decarboxylization of marijuana, wanting to know if vaporization does that for you, or should you decarboxylate before you vaporize?
In fact, if you're going to expose cannabis to heat in the process, you're going to get about as much THC out of it as you can. It's really more for making tinctures and edibles, that the decarboxylation.
Okay, so straight herb in the vaporizer is just fine.
Exactly.
Okay. The study on kids, teenagers, being at risk for synthetic marijuana use. I'm curious about this one and how it might compare to them just being at risk for marijuana use.
What's funny is, I mean, they basically walked through and said, you know, it looks like over 10% of high school seniors are playing with this, and we just don't know how this works. It was developed for animal research, and I think they think, oh, hey, I can pass a drug test with this, or it's legal, therefore it must be safe. And my friend Joey Palomar was taking a look at this, and in particular, it looks like this used to be a thing where African Americans and Latinos used to leave this alone, and now that's no longer the case. And, in fact, I might have him give you a call, Russ, and really walk through these data. It's from that Monitoring the Future study. But yeah, the bottom line is it's very much like the risk for cannabis use, but the negative consequences are just potentially so much worse.
Yeah, and from a health consequence standard, absolutely. And was there anything about this that indicated the presence of drug testing in the schools as being a factor leading towards synthetic use over natural use?
So Joey, Dr. Palomar definitely thinks that that's the case. The number of high schools, it's not broken down by who does and who doesn't do the drug testing in this data set. So it's hard to know in that Monitoring the Future crew if that's having a big impact or not. But when you know just talk to teens about it in general, it may be an accessibility issue in addition to that idea of passing drug testing.
And the just to be clear, for our chat room, I had a question. We're talking about these things that are called Spice or K2, this, exactly, when we talk about these synthetic marijuana.
Exactly.
Yeah, and these are sprayed with what were, you know, lab chemicals, synthetic cannabinoids that are like, you know, they're turbo cannabinoids, man. They're set to really agonize these receptors. There's no way they're intended for, you know.
THC is basically a partial agonist in the sense that it'll get that receptor to fire, but not at the rate that these things do. And none of them have real names. It's always, you know, JWH and a bunch of numbers and stuff like that. Like, these are really synthetics. This is something somebody made in the lab to play with in animals, and it just reached humans in a really backwards, disappointing way.
All right, folks, we got time for one more question here. But before we go, remember, if you want to get your question answered by email and keep it private, you can just email 420research@gmail.com. This last study about increased risk of cerebral vascular events, that would be strokes, wouldn't it?
Exactly.
What's going on there?
It's funny because I haven't been able to see the real data. I've only been able to get a hold of these news coverage things. It's a fairly well-done case-control study where you take folks who've already had one of these cerebrovascular accidents and compare them to comparable folks who haven't, and then try to see what's different on there. Obviously, there are a whole lot of things, including tobacco and alcohol consumption, that are confounding these results. You can't randomly assign somebody to have a stroke. So I'm a little apprehensive about blaming all this on cannabis when, in fact, the tobacco and alcohol stuff may be just as compelling. But once I see the real stats on this paper, I'll be able to say more about it.
All right, we'll follow up on that. Now, in the past, we've talked about the scares that they've mentioned as marijuana use leading to strokes. In that previous data, though, it was the same situation?
In fact, they were trying to do a better job. They went across a whole bunch of different, it was a meta-analysis. They went a whole bunch of different data sets, and it's not randomly assigned. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense pharmacologically, but the bottom line is we need more data, and I can't draw a firm conclusion. If you're at high risk for stroke for other reasons, though, definitely, you know, make sure you exercise regularly, keep your blood pressure down. Don't eat too much fat. Try not to be an angry person. Meditate every day. You know, do all those good things. And I got a feeling the plant is probably not going to be an issue.
All right. Well, Dr. Mitch, we appreciate you joining us every Monday here on Cannabis Science. Folks, if you missed it, you can catch the replay coming up in just 3 hours from now, or catch it online at Radical Russ on YouTube or the 420radio.org page. Thanks, Dr. Mitch. We'll talk to you next week.
Looking forward to it.
All right, when we come back, time for a radical rant, taking on the Oregon Liquor Control Commission and their wish list at the Oregon Legislature. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org.
To the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the Marijuana Nation.